Thank you for listening to the 34th episode of the Career Planning Show. Today's guest is Leanne Nicole, who left her private sector marketing executive career to focus on helping girls around the world and on social impact initiatives. Leanne has a passion for human development and has worked in the social space for UNICEF, Plan Canada, and as the founder of Girl Impact, Because I'm a Girl. Leanne continued her journey in the social space as the executive director of the Canadian Olympic Foundation, where she worked on creating programs to increase accessibility to high-performance sport for those in marginalized communities. The RBC Training Ground program, for example, provides a platform to recruit the best athletes in Canada for the high-performance stream. Currently, Leanne is the president and CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Toronto, where she is thriving in her role as leader and mentor. Big Brothers Big Sisters of Toronto is an organization entirely dedicated to empowering children and youth to reach their potential and break the cycle of poverty through intergenerational connections. Well, thank you everyone for joining us for yet another episode of the Career Planning Show. Our guest today is Leanne Nicole, who is the president of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Toronto. What was your career journey up to the point when you became president and CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters Toronto?
Sure, Alex, thanks for having me. I've had a very non-linear career, which is really reflective if you look at my experiences. But out of university, I started in sales and marketing functions for consumer packaged goods, primarily in beverages. I'm a big believer that if you can prove that you can generate revenue, you will always have a job. That has been my experience. So started out in you know, hammering the streets, selling Evian water, if you can imagine. Actually started with Naya, but then moved to Evian. And that led me to multiple opportunities in the packaged goods beverage space, which I held all the way up to an equity partner in a joint venture in the States. So I spent the first, I would say, half of my career, maybe early on, in developing those skills of sales and marketing and resource mobilization and creative problem solving. And then in 2008, I discovered that one of my values was being pretty heavily compromised, which is that of meaningful work. And having been raised in a marginalized community in just outside of Toronto in Scarborough, it was a big part of who I was that I was neglecting. And so I actually jumped out of the corporate airplane and landed and started a consultancy, which worked with not-for-profit organizations on how to better mobilize resources. So I had clients like UNICEF and others and did a lot of work. And what I realized is that each organization that I've gone to, there's been a unique problem to solve. And oftentimes it wasn't the problem that the board thought the problem was, i.e. we don't have enough money, or we don't have enough, you know, experience, or we don't have, you know, we're solving the wrong problem. And as I've been able to solve these problems for various organizations, I recognized that that's where my strength lied, was in business transformation in the not-for-profit space. So yeah, I did a great amount of work on a campaign called Because I'm a Girl at Plan Canada. And the problem to solve there was that when Plan moved from foster parents plan to Plan, they had it was very disruptive for them. And so we worked on a campaign called Because I'm a Girl to draft that name change. And then I moved on from there to the Canadian Olympic Foundation, which was a phenomenal experience, and worked in the Canadian Olympic space, understanding. And really what I'm very proud of is I tried my best to bring a social lens to the Olympic movement, because it's quite white and elite, and having the ability to shed a light on the fact that the Canadian Olympic team did not reflect Canada or Canada's values of multiculturalism and inclusivity. We were able to develop some programs that helped the pipeline of athletes look more like Canadians and less like those from the economically elite. And then when I came to Big Brothers Big Sisters, this was an endearing brand. Big Brothers Big Sisters is incredibly well known across the country, but had become tired and dated and a little and dormant, quite honestly. So to be able to shift this organization into one that feels tired and dated, into one that feels modern and that people want to belong to, has been a wonderful experience.
What an interesting career experience you've had so far. So mm-hmm. If we dive a little bit deeper into Big Brothers Big Sisters of Toronto right now, would you be able to describe a little bit about its history and perhaps some of the vision, the ethos of the organization right now?
Yeah. So the one thing that has remained constant and consistent for the 109 years that the organization has been incorporated is that the goal is always to put positive, consistent, caring adults in the lives of children who have faced adversity. So that ethos has been there since day one. It's the reason why this organization was established. At the beginning, the mandate was to take young people who had come out of detention in and match them with the Big Brother. It was Big Brothers at the time. Match them with the Big Brother as an effort to prevent recidivism or reoccurrence. And so young people would come out of a detention situation, be court mandated to work with Big Brothers, who happened to be Toronto Police Service on their volunteer time. And they would work together to create socially responsible adults, even though these young people had maybe made some decisions that weren't as positive as they would have liked. And the success rate was enormous. And so what happened, though, about 40 years ago, maybe 50 now, was that, you know, someone had the bright idea, is like, why don't we get to these kids before they've been, you know, in trouble with the law? And so that's how we have started being a prevention agency, an organization that prevents young people from risk-taking behaviors and giving them the opportunity where they're more likely to thrive.
That's wonderful. Over the last 2 years, there's been very significant change in our environment here in Canada in many different ways, and in Toronto as well. As a nonprofit organization who is focused on serving young people who perhaps are coming from a variety of backgrounds, some of which are more economically disadvantaged and may not have the same access to technology as maybe others would. Would you be able to speak to how you've been able to stir the organization to the level of success that you were seeking, even during these tumultuous times over the last 2 years? Are there a few things that you've done? Because there's a lot of organizations that would have really struggled to connect with their community over the last 2 years.
Sure. I mean, and honestly, Alex, if you ask me to run a charity through a pandemic again, I'll probably say no, thank you. What we have found is that we had a really solid strategic direction going well before the pandemic hit, which has proven to be somewhat pandemic resistant. Nothing's pandemic proof, that's for sure, but it's pandemic resistant. And we've actually been able to use the pandemic as a proof of why we need to continue to exist for another 109 years. This is one of those charities where as the CEO, I never want to say I want to be out of a job, because if that means we won't be preventing children from being, you know, in an acute sense of danger or an acute sense of harm. And so, you know, our key services is we actually triage in on adversities. We don't triage in on economic circumstance or what have you. What we know is that when a child has faced significant adversity in their life, i.e., you know, we started with the Adverse Childhood Experience Study, which was, you know, it took place in middle America, white middle America. And so we adapted that prioritization tool for our needs of kids in Toronto. What we know is that kids who over-index on adversity actually come from, many come from marginalized circumstances, because adversity actually is part of the environment or the epigenetics for those children. And so that's why, a good majority of our children come from, or the kids that we serve come from neighborhood improvement areas or the next layer out. So the fact is, though, through the pandemic especially, we had this unique window into the lives of these children, because we did, the first thing we did when the pandemic hit was mobilize devices, to your point, was that kids couldn't do school if they didn't have a device or a unique, even uniquely dedicated device, because if they're sharing, mom's flip phone over three kids, they're not going to school. And so especially is it pay as you play, because there's no data, et cetera. So we actually worked with our partners at Rogers, mobilized devices and access to the internet, so kids could A, continue their education and reduce that inequity, but also so our big brothers and big sisters could be in touch with them in this very socially isolated time. And that actually brought to light a lot of the complications and challenges that families were facing, including food insecurity, domestic violence, kids not going outside for a month. Some of our littles hadn't even gone outside for a month because it was because of danger, and they live in intergenerational homes with older adults, etc. So we were able to actually have this unique purview into their lives and be able to solve for those problems that sadly I think a lot of kids did, who didn't have a big brother or big sister that they could rely on. We didn't have that access to those children. So it just proves that we need more big brothers, big sisters relationships in the lives of kids who face adversity, and now more than ever.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate those thoughts. And I know working full time with a national nonprofit in the area of employment and disabilities, I know how impacted different communities have been over the last 2 years. And being able to provide the resources that you are mentioning is really great. And I'm glad that you've been able to do that. Now, if you're able to think a little bit about what you would say are the primary offerings that Big Brothers and Big Sisters provide, and who is being serviced, who may be listening, may think, wow, career nonprofit would be so wonderful. Yeah. And I wonder if one day I could become Leon Nicole and be the president of such a great organization. But what does it look like from your point of view? What are some of the core things that you are delivering on that are on your to-do list at this point in time, if you wouldn't mind sharing?
Sure. So what I would say is that running a not-for-profit is no different than running a for-profit business. It's still a business, and you still have to be accountable to a bottom line, a top line. I'm accountable to a board of directors who are my stakeholders, right? So I actually approach this as a for-profit business. It just happens to deliver that the profit that I deliver to my shareholders is a social profit. So it's not necessarily, profit sharing, but the fact is that I deliver a social return on investment for every dollar that's invested in Big Brothers, Big Sisters. It's not commonplace for a chair, in my experience, for a CEO of a not-for-profit to think that way. Because oftentimes we're out there saying, please, sir, can I have some more? Like just donor, begging donors. I'm looking for investors. People who want to invest in young people in a prevention mindset, not when they're broken, not when they've already been in trouble with the law, not when they're already recruited into a gang. I'm looking for people who actually see the value in investing in a child, whether it be time, i.e. the volunteer, or money, i.e. the donor, investing in a child before they have the experience of being recruited into a gang, for example. So I'm out there speaking in a very different way. But what I would say my three priorities coming into this organization when the board hired me was to modernize the organization, to give it a new voice, a new look, a new feel that makes people want to belong to this and come and learn about what we're doing, to grow. So make sure that we serve more children in a more efficient way, an effective way, but not just for the sake of chasing numbers. So we have a minimum viable impact model, meaning that we guarantee these are the indicators and the thriving indicators that it, or outcomes that a child will have if given our intervention. And then the third thing is influence. And I'm at all three levels of government, business, sitting at business tables, sitting at community tables, saying we need to invest in these kids before they're broken, because it's A, the right thing to do. B, the social return on investment is high. And so modernize, grow, and influence were the drivers in our strategic plan. We're in the fourth year of our strategic plan, one more year to go. And then what I would say is what this strategic plan has done is provide a solid foundation for growth, because we had to gain some program efficiencies and also rebrand and refresh our brand. So there's a big exercise on that. To prepare for scale, to make sure that we go out and recruit littles and families, that we can actually serve them, or recruit bigs, we can actually serve them. And then three, prepare, we are ready to scale now. So the next strategic plan will be about scaling for growth, but we could not have done that on the faulty foundation that we had, which were really dated systems, all systems, brand systems, IT systems, even our HR systems. They were all very, very dated. So we've modernized all that. We're ready to grow.
Just building on that train of thought, I wonder, would you be able to share a specific example of the kind of impact that the work that you're doing each and every day has had in the life of someone? And perhaps that's something that's driving you to continue to be a leader in the community services space.
Sure. So, I have so many examples of why and who this has worked for. And in fact, I'm having lunch at 1 o'clock with Tyrone Tommy, who is a former little, once a little, always a little, although he's 6'3". So he's not that little anymore. He actually was written up. I can show you right here. He was written up in the Globe and Mail. He's one of the up and coming film producers and directors of our time. And so he is the reason he came into my life very early in my tenure. I've been here 5 years. He actually did our creative direction for our ad campaign as a former little. It's unbelievable. So when you meet people like Tyrone, you think to yourself, okay, and he attributes his success to the involvement of his big brother. You know, we need more Tyrones, right? I also have just recently been a referee for one of our former littles who's applying to med school. And so I've done, four referrals for four different med schools for this young man. And, we need more of him, more Nicholas, right? And so the more I meet these former littles, the more I understand. I would also say I have a personal experience because my husband is a big brother. So I've had my own focus group right in my home, and the difference and the impact he's had on his little's life is just unbelievable. These are kids that society have kind of forgotten about, to be honest with you. And so if we don't have more people investing in young people earlier on, they can't thrive on their own. What people don't realize is no matter how hard these kids try, if they're not exposed to the assets they need in order to thrive, they have no chance of thriving. Their brain just won't develop that way. And so it's not about working harder. It's about exposing them to assets that they need in order to thrive. And without adults, they can't do that. That motivates me because I feel like I'm working with young people, giving them the opportunity to A, walk through childhood safely, safe passage through childhood, but also now seeing on the back end how they're turning out and what they're contributing to society. It's just a phenomenal intervention. And I don't understand why more people haven't gotten involved in the last, say, 30 years as it sat dormant. I'm really glad, though, that the resources are being mobilized now in order to serve more kids this way.
One thought that comes to mind as you're speaking about that is, the term values, and what role could values play in the life of an individual who's looking to develop their career? Or what values an individual has who maybe could decide to become a mentor, become involved with their big brothers, big sisters because of the values that they possess. Mm-hmm. Would you mind speaking about values and the impact that they should potentially play in the career development way of thinking for both what we might call a mentor as well as a mentee?
Sure. Well, everyone says they're values based, right? Like if you ask someone, are you values based? They're going to say yes. If you ask them, what are your values? They often hem and haw, right? It's like, well, I've never really put a lot of thought into it. My recommendation to anyone who is in their early career development is not only claim their values based, actually really be able to articulate their values. And I look at values in two different buckets. One is your core values. These are your unwavering values that under no circumstance, and I mean no circumstance, and you can Google me to show you how I've used my values in real life in a high profile situation, is that under no circumstance will you compromise those values. So for me, my core values are integrity. You can't push me on off integrity, no matter how hard you try. I won't sign an invoice that isn't on the up and up. I won't, you know, I'll always be honest. I will always make sure that my integrity stays intact, because that's part of my reputation that I can't get back once it's broken. Authenticity. I spent most of my life trying to be something that I wasn't. And that was very painful. It was exhausting. And it actually didn't make me a happy person. Right. So even working in private sector, like I really struggled. I made a lot of money, but I didn't, you know, that's not what was important to me. And it wasn't in my authentic self. And then gratitude. I'm as grateful for what we deem as good and what we deem as bad, because I think that anything that happens to you is a learning opportunity. And I'm so grateful for the life that I have. I'm grateful for my career. I'm grateful for my job here. I'm grateful for my family. And so I think those are ones that, like, under no circumstance can you push me off them. And I will actually lose my job over them. Like, that's how strongly I feel. And then I have my essence values. And those values are really important to me, but I know that I can't honor them 100% of the time. So things like courage and innovation and meaningful work, deep connection with people, joy, so important to me, but not every decision I make, for example, is going to be joyful, right? So I understand that these, I'm thriving when they're in balance, but I also understand that there have to be some flexibility. And so I clearly articulate those. I also, when I'm going into work for an organization, I want to know their values and not only the words on the wall, but I actually want to know and have live examples. And I asked this of this organization and they didn't have values that they could articulate, which I saw as an opportunity. But if I was young in my career and I went to someone, to the hiring manager and said, what are the values of this organization? And they couldn't articulate me. I see that as a huge red flag. Because I did work for an organization where the values were shiny on the wall, but what I can tell you is they weren't living into those values at all. And it was horrible, horrible career situation. I learned from it. I moved on. But what I recognize is my values were not in line with the company's values. That's how important they are. So if someone comes in here as a hire and asks me, what are the values of this organization? I'll hire them in a minute. Because they actually understand how important it is to making sure that the workplace is an environment that aligns with their values. And if it doesn't align with their values, they can make that decision right away. So to me, it's a decision-making framework. It's very easy. Does this align with my values? Yes or no. It's a platform for fierce conversations and effective conversations. You squashed my value of integrity when you asked me to sign that invoice that wasn't on the up and up. Right. And it's also an accountability framework. When you go to bed to say, did I live into my values today? Yep, I did. Or no, maybe my value of joy was compromised. Tomorrow I'll go seek out joy. So that's how I live my values. That's how I think young people have an opportunity to live their values. But if you don't know what they are, then it's hard to live into them. It's that important. And if you really want to be satisfied with your career, to me, that is the core. It's the core of how you're going to find the best possible options.
Wonderful. Wow. I really appreciate you diving deep into that topic. And I think it's a good point to end this conversation on, because it's a really opportune time for each one of us to perhaps reflect on what are our values and what are we going to stand up for? What are we not going to stand for in our work environments? And therefore, really be able to make wise decisions when it comes to our career development and or how we might be able to guide others into evolving their careers. Yeah, Nicole, thank you so much for taking the time to be interviewed for the Career Planning Show. How can our listeners stay in touch with you?
Sure. Well, I'm on LinkedIn for sure. So that's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me is through LinkedIn. And it's Leanne_Nicole. So you can just make sure that you make sure it's two L's in the last name, but you can find me there is probably the easiest way.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure to add the link to your LinkedIn profile in the episode description. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Alex. Have a great.
Thank you for listening to the Career Planning Show. Visit rashcanu.com, that's RASCANU.com, to subscribe to my free newsletter, find free events that you can attend in the Toronto area, and to connect with me, Alex Rashcanu.